Welcome back to Deep Thoughts, ladies and gentlemen. Today we're going to discuss focus. Focus is very interesting. And again, it's one of these self-help sort of titles. And so, a bunch of people actually lean away from this information when it's exactly what they need, sort of sad. So if you're able to listen, believe me, this will be important. Again, anytime you listen to anything self-help of any kind, there's two things that occur. Someone teaches you something you didn't know, or they affirm something you already believe. Either way, if you respect the source, you'll either learn something or confirm something. And that's huge. So huge, right? The sun's just about to drop a bomb on me, so I'm going to get really warm here. Focus. Do we really need to talk about it? I say, of course. Now, I always use metaphors all the time and analogies all the time, but focus is a beautiful, beautiful analogy when it comes to the fabric of your life. Now, the beautiful thing about focus is that it comes with a beautiful analogy. Now, let's say that your life is built out of a bunch of moments using a bunch of different skills, right? You use a bunch of different skills to get things done in your life, but you're trying to build this wall. And you need mortar to hold the bricks together. I'm going to suggest that focus is the one skill that brings it all together, which is why it needs to be pulled out by itself, discussed by itself, because at the same exact time, each time you change what you're accomplishing and how you're accomplishing it, each individual brick is different. One's a cinder block, one's a stone, one's, a shoebox. And the focus that is used to hold it all together, in my opinion, it varies drastically project to project. Focus is also one of these concepts that we don't discuss. We know we're supposed to have it, but we don't say it enough. Some folks get into it, and once they get into it, they automatically find its benefits, and they'll tell you, no, I got to focus on this, I got to focus on this. But out of all my friends, it's like, I don't know, 1 in 25 says it for maybe a couple quarters a year. Now, depending on your trade skill, depending on where you are with your life and what you're trying to do in your personal time, focus will become a big, big part of your life. When you drag your ass out of bed in the morning and you go to school or you go to work, you're just doing what you got to do. Otherwise, you get fired. Otherwise, you get kicked out of school. And you realize when you go to work, you're kind of literally focusing on the screen, your teacher's face, or whatever. That's definitely some focus, and that's definitely where focus needs to be applied. But the focus I'm talking about is the focus when you are trying to kind of go out on your own, or a higher level focus that is your entire life, related to your success, your goals. The things that you want to get accomplished before you end your life. I should say reach the end of your life. The first time focus was imprinted on me in a really big way, I was, I guess, around 41 or so. I had the privilege of working with LL Cool J for about a year. And the word that he surrounds himself with is focus. I know that sounds crazy, right? But he would just, all the time, just everything. And of course, when you talk to a guy like that, he's a businessman. I mean, he's not just some joker. He is highly intelligent, super focused. And so every time he walked in the room, he would, even though he was excited about what we were building for him, which was an online music studio, he would rather be in bed. He'd rather be talking to his kids or something. I mean, he'd rather be doing something else. And so it was sort of like, I'm going to enjoy this moment, but I'm going to focus and get this shit done. I want to use the software more than I want to talk about it being made. And it really left a mark on me. I would meet with him, and his email signatures would have little rhymes about focusing. And he always says, dream work makes the team work. And it really improved things and brought the value up to me. So how does one human being transmit information to another human being about focus? Isn't it just a big, well-crafted sentence about, you know, stick to it, guys. Just keep going. Oh, it'll get hard, but you just keep focusing, and then focus is all done. I'm going to suggest something a little bit different than most folks, which is, you know, when you, if you were to run a marathon, let's just say, and this is coming from a guy who has not, but you know that you have to practice. My family has a lot of people that run marathons or have, and so I've watched the whole process nauseatingly from all sides. God bless them. But they start running, they start jogging, and they start, you know, increasing the distance that they can handle, their endurance. The people that are organizing the marathon are picking which streets people are going to run down. They are planning on how to shut the streets down, how to bring the news out, how to promote the thing beforehand, how to handle all of the, you know, numbers on people's chests. They're going to try to track the first winners. It's a big, giant thing, right? Most people know that, but they don't stop to think about it. Now, in that particular scenario, you're a participant in a much larger event, and there are hundreds, if not thousands, of employees and individuals all participating in creating that event. But now here's the rub. Any project you have in your life, whether or not you have friends that are helping you do it, or whether or not you're doing it all by yourself, it's a gigantic production inside your mind, which requires all these different skills, all these different focuses, etc. And so focus gets to the point where it needs a lot more from you than just focus, just the basic definition. Focus also requires that you have a physical body that can focus, a mind that can focus, you know, the nutrition in your body to feed your mind to focus. When I lecture, I'm lecturing in a really nice film and art school right now. I tell the students, I say, look, you're all different sizes and shapes. I said, you're just trying to get through this college as quick as possible, right? You're trying to get that job as quick as possible. But I said, look, every single thing that you eat and drink, the amount of sleep that you get, it affects your ability to do anything in this world because it creates a nutritional supply, a wave of energy that comes and goes, right? The sine cosine wave of your energy. And obviously what you want is the most sustainable, high energy you can possibly get in your body 24 hours. And it's funny, and I tell them, I say, look, so you want to eat healthy, and you want to eat consistently healthy. You know, I mentioned a couple times on the show, I eat the same thing over and over and over every day. You know, I have my variable restaurants I go to, but I really try to go in a small circle of restaurants. That way I don't get tired of everything at the same time, but at the same time my body can figure out how to break down what I'm giving it daily and translate that into energy so I can do all this stuff, right? But what happens when you're young? When you're young, you run into all of the peer pressure of drinking and doing drugs. You know, Monster drink, super duper popular. And, you know, every once in a while I'll swig down something like the Mountain Dew drink, Quick Kickstarter or something like that. I'll drink one of those every once in a while. They're super sugar bombs. Not good for me. I'll just pound one in the morning and little else. So, you know, with the marathon analogy, I want you to understand you're everything. You're playing all roles. This whole thing is your game of life. Now, you actually may be focused in a joint effort, so there's a little bit of a fracturing of that analogy, but you still have your responsibilities. You know, for those of you trying to shortcut anything in life, I almost made an episode about shortcuts because I really don't think there are any. I remember the greatest analogy I ever learned about shortcuts is my boss came up to me and he said, you know, it's better to take a shorter amount of time to do the job right than a longer amount of time to do the job wrong. And I'm looking at him like, yeah, like, do you consider yourself, you know, Socrates all of a sudden? And he explained to me, doing the job right and taking a shorter amount of time is usually what is called the normal way, and taking a longer amount of time to do the job wrong is what we call a shortcut. Just think about it, you know. There has to be a definition of what completeness means, and a shortcut means that you are negating part of what needs to be done. Now, we all do shortcuts, and it's usually in Hollywood or video games or anything creative where you're really limited for time and money. It's just a compromise. But everyone in the room knows that you're not doing the job right. Everyone knows, well, we'd really like to have, you know, this special effect go this way. We'd like to have every particle hand manipulated, or new algorithm written to do this or that, or we really like to get that shot, like to get some coverage on that shot, blah, blah, blah. But you don't have time. You don't have money. And no one's able to volunteer. You're just not able to volunteer, and so something gets cut. A lot of times when you see movies that have great things, like Star Wars was all about a bunch of people working really hard after hours. That's what that first movie in 1977 was made from. And then they earned their paycheck in the second film. It's very typical in Hollywood. There's a lot of indie movies that the same thing, but then there's a lot of great movies where everyone's just coming to work, doing their job, and it's just, it looks stupid. The movie looks dumb. They picked bad sets. They didn't even build the set. You know, everyone's just like, well, if I don't get paid, I'm not doing it. Screw that. Which is why company loyalty is also massive to help that process out. But back to focus, back to your energy levels and focus. You have a different energy wave than someone else on a natural level. Some of you wake up in the morning and, by God, you're just the chipperiest little things on planet Earth, aren't you? You get to about 10 o'clock at night, 8 o'clock at night, and you start becoming a sloth. But you've had a damn good day. You've done everything you need to do. You kept the world turning while the rest of us are comatose. And then, you know, I'm getting up, and it's like if I'm living with someone who's a morning person, it's almost like that Hollywood scene where, you know, I'm moving super duper slow and the person's just jamming around me, and then about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I start going faster, she starts going slower, and then we essentially get the same amount of work done. It's just we're in different cycles a little bit. And then I typically adapt to whoever I'm with, which is cool. I like being a morning person, but I'm not one. You know, I've done a ton of these shows in the wintertime. I love doing these shows at like 7 in the morning, 6:30 in the morning. It's freezing out here. I'm just all bundled up. My little chimney called a cigar with me. Boy, that cold air keeps your mind focused, I'll tell you that much. But your energy levels are going to help you focus. They will. Now, at the same time, you're going just to put this footnote in there. When you do start getting tired, like I've said in previous episodes, they have studied the fact that when you get tired, your left brain goes to sleep, your right brain wakes up and takes over. For those of you who are creative, you will notice that you get a lot of ideas as soon as you get tired. Doesn't matter what time of day it is, it's because your left brain's letting go. The anal retentive, you know, babysitter's gone. That's why I think that when the super duper left brainers that I've dated, they'll get up really quick in the morning, and as soon as they get tired, they go to bed. And they never persist 30 minutes to an hour beyond being tired, because they can't. Their cycles are wound down, you know, because of pragmatism. But they never experience the creativity, and therefore they are not creative. So, you know, we have this concept of focus. How do we hone in on such an esoteric word, such that, you know, I can just say something to you and you know I'm talking about focus, right? Because again, if I just say, pay attention, you know, always think about what you're doing, and boy, it'll just all work out, that's not really going to help you out. You already knew all that stuff. I will tell you the secret to my focus. This is not something I consciously was aware of until I was probably in my late 20s, early 30s. I told you guys a long time ago that when I was a kid, I was 9 years old, and I was in the car with my mom. We're traveling from one city to another, so we got a good hour drive, a couple hour drive. And she was lecturing me that there's a person in my family that was a quitter. Always quit. Very talented person. Could finish anything and do a great job, but never usually does. By God, that person continued that way my whole life. Unbelievable. But she said, I don't want you to be like that. I want you to finish what you start. It's the key to life. And it was one of those moments, you know, I was a very, very lucid 9-year-old kid. I mean, oof. Look, I think back at them like, geez, how did I have any fun? I did, but what did I ever have any fun? And I remember just looking back, you know, your little kid, there's no seatbelts at the time, so you just kind of would look around the car while you're having a conversation. I remember being late and me looking out the back window and watching all the other cars, and I'm just thinking, okay, man, I'm going to finish what I start. But what I didn't realize was I had built up, from that point, I got so into that one thing that it sort of turned into a psychosis. I got to the point I had to finish everything. Whether or not it was good for me, whether or not it was a good use of time, I finished everything constantly. Except for maybe all the food on my plate. How many people do you know that they finish the food on their plate, and when you ask them about the whole ritual of doing so, they tell you it's because my parents yelled at me and made me finish everything on my plate. I have friends who struggle with obesity because of that regimen from their parents. Too much proportion, right? So the way that psychosis helped me focus was that focusing was the only way I could serve my psychosis of having to finish everything that I started. But now here's the interesting thing about finishing what you start. This is what I learned as I got older, a couple decades into realizing I had this issue. I learned so much by finishing anything. A stupid little project that had nothing to do with my life, I'd finish it. And I'd learn something from that was unrelated to the immediate presence of my life. But the takeaway was pretty amazing, right? It also helped me when I wanted to start a business, when I wanted to start my jobs. You know, my bosses could always rely on me to get things done. And because I was sort of obsessive at times, they knew I was fast because I wanted things done. You know, if I even drew a picture or painted a painting, I used to sell paintings when I first came to California to make money on the side. Unfortunately, I would buy like a gigantic canvas, 60 or 30 by 40 canvas. And so, and the thing is I also had a preponderance of accepting projects that I've never done before. Just complete terror. You know, one of the things I did was paint a portrait of a family. And I'd never done that before. And, you know, when you're painting people's faces, their loved ones, it can get really creepy really fast if you're not good. You start creating like a zombie family because you can't get the paint mixed properly. I think it was pretty good in the end. But I guarantee it ain't hanging on anyone's wall, I don't think. We'll see. But with that psychosis, I grew to control every single day, every single second of every single day with what's on my plate. What do I have to finish so I can go on to the next thing? Every kid likes new candy, right? For me, new projects were new candy. And so I practiced my regimen at the places of work that I had. You know, I work for this TurboTax people for maybe a year and a half, I guess. They screw up and lose a bunch of money. I get a job drawing video games. Well, the first three projects I had in video games were assigned to me, and I was getting paid to do it. Then that company went tits up because Activision went tits up. And so a programmer and I got together and made a game. And so here I am 19 years old. I've got to survive. I have to design a game, theoretically, on paper, like its storyline, what it's going to be about, what it's going to look like, all the different rooms, because it was a kind of sort of a dungeon crawler type game, but it was sci-fi, a marine on an asteroid killing humans that are turning into aliens, and there were no stories like that before we did the game. The best example would have been Space Hulk, the board game, but we killed it. But then I had to draw it all. My buddy was doing the programming. Another friend of mine was doing the calculations on the hit tables. But we're kids and we're creating a video game because that's all we can do. We were dumped out. You know, a call one morning and it was like we just had all three of our games canceled. Such a bummer, man. And so then I got back into corporate. We sold the game to Virgin Mastertronics. I went back into the tax company at a higher level. Popped out of that, went to the Bay Area. Did some corporate database programming. for a short bit, and I created a product. Created a product that beautified screen design automatically. Bunch of artificial intelligence. And here I am, 23, and I'm making this incredibly huge product with all these brand new algorithms that no one's ever done. In fact, to this day, it's never really been done. But I'm working a full 8-hour day at a minimum, coming home and working at least 4 hours at home every single night for probably 8 months. I'm engaged, so I'm trying to give my time to my fiance at the time. But it was, you know, I bit off this amazing thing where I saw this just epiphany of a product. I thought, man, you know, it was a product where, you know, you have hundreds of programmers sometimes building one database for a company, and they all have crappy standards, you know, of how to build an interface, and then these companies would put all these requirements on them to put 3D assets, you know, which the product didn't support 3D, so they were kind of hand, you know, moving around lines and stuff. It was just horrible, right? So the interface requirements were slowing down development, so my product went in and within, you know, milliseconds would do it all for them. Figure out where everything is, align everything, put icons and buttons, color buttons properly, grout rectangles and all kinds of 3D effects and stuff. But I bit this thing off, and my first client was the Fortune 1000 company that I was working for, a pharmaceutical company. So it wasn't like I could create a bugged product. I had to create a bug-free product that had more features than anything that this product had ever done before, right? And so every day I'm waking up, and, you know, one, it was exciting because I knew no one else was doing it. Two, it was exciting because it was a new frontier for me. I was testing out my mind. You know, I'd worked really, really hard to get mathematical in high school. I worked really hard to get extremely good at programming this product. And so it was sort of, the focus was like a little packet of time of putting my time in, getting an alkylative accomplishment, and then going on to the next one, which is where I'm going to get into this next methodology here. Focus is always associated usually with time. So, you know, one of the best things you can do for your brain, in my opinion, is think about your entire life in a timeline. You know, where you get the little dot on one side and you draw a line with the arrows signifying the future. And, you know, you have little ticks on the line, and you call it little call-outs. The line goes up and there's a paragraph about what happened on that time frame. Now, the funny thing is that most of you who can remember any part of your life, you already think in a timeline fashion. If I sat down with you on this patio and I started interviewing you about your life, and I said, well, tell me about what it was like to be 4, 5, 6. What was your first movie? What was your first, you know, boyfriend, girlfriend? Your first job? Inside your brain is a timeline, an illustrated image of your life. If you want to have a great memory about all the things that we talk about on this show, especially historical things, and most of you have this talent, but if you aren't thinking about your life in a timeline, in history in a timeline, then start doing it, because it'll absolutely become the visual mechanism that will give you ultimate power in your life. And it will most definitely rationalize and energize your focus, because a focus is a daily rationale. I mean, you're asking yourself, why am I doing this? Why am I doing this? Oh, that's why. Because I like this. I like that. Usually has to do with, I like accomplishing things. It doesn't matter if anyone else notices half the time. It's just between you and yourself. And at the end, you get the big prize. You know, when I made my product, I made it surely out of some left brain, you know, you know, myopic focus. I just had my head down and I was making this thing. And then I went and spoke about, would have been 2 years later. I was 25 years old. And I went and spoke at a database conference in Texas, in Dallas, Texas. And I stood up and I was teaching the internet for the first time, 1996. I had a standing room only, probably 650 people. And I gave them a full demonstration. I fucking blew their minds. It was so much fun. But then I'm walking out and I'm having people, you know, they always rush you after you do a presentation. It's good. So some people are talking about the presentation, most of them. And then I got out into the lobby, which is where I could really shake hands with people and talk. And this one guy pushes through the crowd, just like a paparazzi or a fan or something, right? Pushes through the crowd and he goes, "Are you the dude that made that GUI designer product?" And I said, "Yeah." And he grabbed my hand and shook the shit out of it. He goes, "That is the coolest fucking thing I've ever seen in my life." He goes, "I use it every single day. I, you know," and they sort of alluded that he was spreading it illegally. I'd already made the decision when I formed the company. I wanted everyone to spread the first version illegally as much as possible, such that the second version would be purchasable. There's no way to protect things back in those days. But, you know, I sold quite a few copies. It's pretty cool. But the timeline's important because that's what I used to make that product. I've talked about it several times in season one, that any goal that you've set in life has a sort of an invisible number of steps that you must take to get your goal. And you don't know how many steps it takes. You can do all the planning that you want on a piece of paper, but most of the time there's a bunch of little steps that you didn't write down. And what I've figured out about folks is if you were to write down on a piece of paper, "I think there's 10 steps to get this thing done," and then you find out that there's, you don't know, you're at 15 and you're going, shit, one turns into like 8 steps. If you sell yourself the expectation that something has a finite number of steps, 10 things you have to do, and if you're good with this, then do it. But if you don't, if you've never done it before, brace yourself for finding out that there are a lot more steps. And don't freak out. Just say, that's the way it is. You know, if you watch this show and then you go try it and it happens, laugh your ass off. Just say, "Oh, that fucking guy in his backyard, I hate it when he's right." But your focus is just to get a step done. That's the good thing. All you need to worry about is the most finite packet of accomplishment that you can possibly do. I'm going to give you a really stupid analogy. You got to mow your lawn. You're looking at your lawn going, shit, and you're like, damn, I got to use the little weed whacker thing. I got to mow, and there's all kinds of other steps to mowing I don't like. Some of you guys dig it. I might dig it now as I get older, but what do you got to do? Well, you got to go first, put your clothes on that you're willing to mow in. That's the step you forgot to write down. You got to get your lawnmower out. Oh, Jesus Christ. Who put all this crap behind the lawnmower? You know, now you got to pull that crap out of the garage and get your lawnmower out. And you don't have enough, gasoline and oil mixed together, whatever the hell. So it's not starting. You got to go to the store, get some, fill up your gas, come back. You feel me? I won't take you down the whole idea, but there are a million steps. You're trying to mow and there's a toy in the yard and you're like, shit, I got to stop mowing. Move the toy. And it just keeps going and going until you're finished. And at the end, you're exhausted because in your mind, you allocated a certain amount of time and energy that you were going to allow yourself to have the interest and dedication to mowing the lawn. But in the end, it required a shit ton more stuff. Well, let me tell you, that's the way life works too. But if you set your expectations to expect the unexpected, man, is life easier. When I taught my daughter how to drive a car, and I've taught a lot of kids how to drive a car, I tell them, I say, as soon as you start hitting the road, you need to expect the unexpected constantly, you know? And they don't really know what that means until you take them out and you say, okay, see that alleyway? Car can come buzzing out of that alleyway, losing control of their car, pulling right in front of you. That semi right there can squish you and kill you in 2 seconds. So stay away from it. Respect its mass. Don't pull in front of it and slam on the brakes. It will kill you. It will crush you. Your tire could blow out and you're going to lose your steering. Your timing belt could fly out of the hood and your car engine stops. You're in the fast lane going 80. Now, I have focused really well in my life and I've accomplished probably over 90% of everything I ever set out to do in my life. You know, what I'm remaining, my remaining goals are always the business I'm working on at the time, which is always infinitely unknown. but obviously have it strategically worked out. But then maybe getting one of my films made. That's probably the last two things I'd love to do. However, you know, when I look at people like Steve Jobs, look at his life. You, regardless of how successful you are in focusing, Jesus, you look at a guy like that and you're like, the guy never slept. Artist known as Prince, that guy never slept, constantly worked, constantly created out, you know, what, he crank out 1,000 songs that are sitting in some vault, but he released 300 songs. That's amazing. Consequently, let's remember that every time they ever asked him what his favorite song was, he said, the last song that I made. And I think that it always frustrated me, that answer. It's like, what? Come on. There's no way you just made a song better than DMSR from 1999 album. You just didn't. So how could your next one be your most favorite one? But the embedded lessons, the implied lessons that he's teaching us there is live in the now and love now more than anything, because it's all you have. You don't really have your future. You don't really have your past. All you have is now. I rarely share my personal now strategies with you guys, and it's not because I'm trying to hide it, it's kind of a weird thing to say. But this is something I'm going to tell you right now. As of September, this is the 30th of September, 2016, I am making a new commitment to myself to live in the now more than I ever have before. Because I am realizing that I'm pacifying myself with the future. You know, procrastination is the opposite of focus. It really is. But how do we facilitate procrastination? Concepts of the future facilitate procrastination. I'll do that tomorrow. Eh. Now, if you build a plan on a piece of paper in your mind or in a piece of paper right in front of you, the cool thing is that you can say, well, this can't exist before that, before this, before that. So I do have to do that at a future time. And then you go right back to focusing on the thing that you're on right now. But let me throw you a higher level concept when it comes to focus, as it relates to the now. Because I'm just starting. I mean, I feel like a baby in the concept of living in the now. As you think about your existence in this world on 1 second. I'm here, right? Now. Think about if you have a timeline in your mind and you can conceive of the past quite well, and consequently you can conceive of the future pretty well, then you sort of see yourself in this space-time continuum. The more spiritual and existential that you get, it gets even worse. Now, orientation-wise, in terms of thinking about your spirit, it's very valuable to think of yourself like that, to give yourself some orientation in the universe. And that's good. But that's a sort of a separate discipline that you're trying to feed. Where am I? Who am I? Ba ba ba. But when it comes to getting something done, which is sort of your responsibility in being given life. And maybe I'm overthinking this, maybe I'm being too anal. Maybe you are supposed to just sit around, smoke cigars, and drink scotch or something. The severity of now, I think, is eroded the more that we have a concept of the past and the future in our mind at that exact time. It's sort of as if we need to get rid of our long-term memory and get rid of any predictive concept memory of the future and just remove everything in our consciousness that isn't about the right now. And, you know, I'm pining. I'm starting this process now, you know, today, as a matter of fact. I made a commitment to myself last night. Sounds a little goofy, but I did. For any of you, just to give you an analogy that attaches to this so that we can kind of all get on the same page, most of you have had this experience in your lifetime, regardless of your age. If you can push play on a YouTube player or push play on a podcast player, you've had this experience when you woke up in the morning and you were late. Or, even better, you're not quite late yet, but Jesus, if you do not haul ass and cut corners and get, you know, take your whole life's practice of getting ready in the morning and execute quickly, you're going to be late, and there could be dire consequences. If you're in school, you're missing an exam and getting an F. If you're at work, you're going to get fired. You know, or you're not going to get fired, but you're going to have a reputation adjustment at work. They're going to go, oh, I see. You really aren't as perfect as we thought you were. And you don't want to, you know, you're not going to be that way anyway, but you, if you can hang on to a good reputation of attendance and tardiness, not being a part of your life, it's good. And so the moment that you wake up and realize and you go, oh shit, like almost every human being says that word, oh shit, and then you haul ass, right? You either take the shortest shower you've ever had in your life, or you do the French shower, whatever they call it, where you just rag yourself down, or you just throw on a lot of perfume or cologne and you get your ass out of bed. That's when we really live in the now, isn't it? A sense of urgency that shuts down the right brain, puts you in fight or flight. Your left brain takes over and you're a pragmatic execution machine of your life. Now, I don't want you to be in any state of peril like that when you're focusing. I want you to be calm, cool, relaxed. Take in the data that needs to be analyzed to accomplish the next goal in your life, whether it be just the next 5 minutes, the next 5 hours. You know, calculate yourself. When you plan a trip, or you, especially if you're going to go hiking or something where you could get into the elements and get hurt, how many weeks or months do you plan that? Even if you've never done it, you know, if I said, well, we're going to go camping, you want to go? You're like, I don't really like camping. But the reason why you probably don't like camping is it's rugged, it's weird, and there are variables you don't understand. You know that there's predators and all kinds of stuff, insects and animals, and all that matters when you value your life, right? Maybe you're not in shape and you're like, well, how many months is it going to be? Oh, we're not going until 6 months later. Oh, okay, well, I guess I'll hit the gym then for a few weeks beforehand. But focus is also about the battle. Working with Cool J, I will tell you that dude just, you know, he was already very inspiring if you lived in the era of his lyrics and you realized that most of what he wrote was all about focusing. Like I said in the previous episode, he wrote a song called Breakthrough on Bigger and Deafer. Breakthrough doesn't have the word breakthrough in it. It's really interesting, but it's all about his rise in fame and fortune through hard work and all of the psychology that he was able to distill from society, people that, you know, complain all the time but never do anything to fix their life. And then when he succeeded and came back home, people started treating him weird and wanting things for free or hating on him because he really focused and worked. And you'll find that's definitely a part of life. The more you succeed, that's why I think that gloating your wealth is a very has to be a very careful process. You know, there's a way of getting out of a Lamborghini to piss everyone off who sees you do it, and there's a way that you look like you appreciate your accomplishment. There just is, right? But that guy would show up to my north office, and you know, everyone in the whole building. I probably had at one point 20 employees in that north office, and my God, they would just focus unbelievably. And it was sort of, he has an aura around him that does it. You know, that's why I feel like people don't understand certain presidential candidates, because they're extremely focused and it's sort of, let's get stuff done. A goal-oriented president who is committed to accomplishing things that haven't been accomplished in a really long time is very exciting for me. Because I know what it's like to be in that person's mind. I've worked with those people, the most brilliant, famous for focusing and accomplishing things, people. Think about Steven Spielberg, for instance. I've never met the guy, but from 1976 or 75 when he made Jaws all the way up to, the late 90s, I should say early 90s, mid 90s, he was cranking out landmark films over and over and over again. I'm not sure he had a stinker from 75 to 95. Jurassic Park 2 is probably his first big stinker. Jesus, man, that's almost 20 years. That's almost 20 years of utter perfection. The guy deserves a break at some point, right? That could be you. That maybe is you. And the beautiful thing is that once your accomplishments mean more to you than anything else, than anyone else in the world, like your own accolade for what you do is more important than anyone walking up to you and saying, God, that story you wrote is great. That thing you did is great. You are set for life. as long as you never lose that sensibility. So let's get down to some brass tacks. I've kind of meandered around to get us all on the same page. Now, what can you do to focus? Blatantly. I'm going to say that you go down the path I'm going down right now, which is to consider how the concept of your past and the concept of a potential future stunts your now. If you're a procrastinator like most of us are, we all are procrastinators, besides those folks like Cool J and Steve Jobs and Spielberg. Those guys, I do not believe, are procrastinators. They're micro procrastinators if they are. Oh, that millisecond wasn't completely used up perfectly. But for most of us, we have those moments. Okay, so let's take the first step and let's sort of erase the potential of the future being a bedrock for doing future things. Let's say that if we don't consider it possible today, then it will never happen. And you'll get excited about sort of pining to the bigger things. You know, when you, if you're making a video game, there's definitely three stages to doing something. You sit down and you design what you think would be the greatest game on planet Earth, and then you start creating it. You have illustrations, you have programming, you put it all together. If you're smart, you won't spend too much time drawing stuff. You'll just draw little boxes and squares and circles, get your game mechanic down. Man, if you can make boxes, circles, and squares, and diamonds, and rectangles, and triangles, and all that stuff fun, then you got a game on your hands. By the time the artist comes in and stylizes it, whew, you're going to make some money. But you can't play the prototype for quite a while because it's going to take you time to build the code. And so when you first start playing the prototype and figuring out your mechanic, wow, look at what focus afforded you. Focus afforded you the ability to test your game, to see it move. And if you're not building something as complex as a video game, then pat yourself on the back that what you're doing is going to be even easier. Almost none of us like cleaning our houses. I mean, really cleaning it, right? But damn it, when you wake up in the morning and that damn thing is spick and span, your bathroom doesn't have a hair out of place, everything scrubbed down, your tile's white. Oh man, doesn't that not feel amazing? You feel like somehow the order that you've created in your house is helping you live a more focused day. So understand that if you're surrounded by chaos, that's an algorithm, that's a frequency. That's a frequency that at least your brain processes as a pattern. So if that bothers you, and some people like living in chaos, but they can't focus, and some people can focus, it's nuts, right? There are these reports that say that people with messy rooms are smarter and accomplish more. Maybe. Maybe. Of the three people I just named, I can assure you their homes are clean. Be it they hire someone to do it, but if they couldn't hire someone to do it, I think they would try their best to keep it that way. But maybe your style's different. Whatever makes you truly feel comfortable, but be aware that you could be, you know, stifling yourself by creating an environment or allowing an environment to exist around you that doesn't exude the frequency that is focus. Maybe that's a good practice. Cleaning up your place is a good way to practice focus on a daily basis. You know, I love the at least the romanticized lifestyle of a samurai. I mentioned this once before, but a samurai was to be a botanist and take care of plants. You know, is it the Bundai plant? They were to write poetry, to command the English language and thus command philosophy and life and love. And of course, the third regiment was to become the best warrior with a sword that you could possibly be. And the idea is that a person who is really good at a sword but has no personal discipline is the most chaotic, dangerous human being on planet Earth. And those who designed the regiment of a samurai said, well, we want, you know, if we're going to send an assassin after someone to kill someone, then they better know everything about life to take a life. And that's why they were told to be poets, because you would then understand the fabric of life. The more you had to write a poem every day or two times a day and then take care of the birth, death, and resurrection of a plant, the cycle of life was embedded in them. You know, it's the old story that I love sort of not completely on target, but on topic. But there's a famous story about a samurai that went to another man, and there was a protocol for killing someone. You had to pull out your pedigree, your personal pedigree, and read it to the person you're about to murder, and you had to read the charge against them to make sure that they understood why they were being killed. And then the other person is supposed to literally extend their neck and be killed, sort of to avoid being chopped to pieces or something in some fight. But on one particular occasion, the person that had all the information read to him spit in the face of the samurai that was reading all the rights to him. And you're thinking, wow, what would happen in today's day? Today's day, the guy would stop reading, pull out the sword, and start chopping that guy up to pieces, right? But what did the samurai do in this story, in this fable? I hope this happened, because this is kind of cool. The guy put away his scroll, got real quiet, and left. And the way that the parable goes is, why did he do that? And the reason is that at that point it became personal. And a samurai is not allowed to kill due to his personal, you know, preferences in life. He is serving the emperor or the empress in his deeds. And so he walked away and said, someone else is going to have to come kill you. Imagine that guy just living forever because he can spit in someone's face. Isn't that awesome? Now, let's say that you do what I say. You're able to get your perspective on life. You understand that the concept of your future is sort of a dangerous pacification of the now to give you the ability to procrastinate a task into the future. You got that one down for the most part. Now you're sitting there and you have the tasks in your front of your face. Well, you may not have them sorted out. You may not know the exact next one. At that point, it's important you don't lose your focus because you lose your constitution. You know, you're like, geez. You get to a point where you just say, God, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to do this next step. Instead of saying, oh, you know, I can't do this, I'm going to quit. You say to yourself, I don't know how to do this, and I need to go learn how to do this. So my next step isn't actually accomplishing the goal. It's figuring out how to accomplish the goal. Again, with YouTube, just search on what you're trying to do in YouTube. And by God, there's a video that teaches you how to do it. There's a website tutorial that'll teach you how to do it, and you will learn how to do it, and you'll learn how to do it well, and then you'll do it. If you don't find it anywhere online, which is hard to believe, go find a friend that's done it. Have conversations, and believe me, there's nothing more elating to a human being to say, I really need your information, your opinion, your life experience, and someone else goes, Jesus, really? I thought I was the only person that ever did this, and now you want my opinion on how to do this, or my knowledge on how to do this? I feel so much better. Boom. They start talking, you start listening, and oh my God, the insurmountable goal that you have in your now table, you can do it now. Also, don't forget my analogy of chopping down the redwood tree with a hatchet. Redwood trees are massive. Chopping it down with a hatchet's a ludicrous idea, but that's certainly how life works. You keep chopping and you keep chopping, and eventually you know, as long as you take a little piece of that tree out, it's going to fall one day, and that's you reaching your goal. And that's part of the now algorithm. If you can move the ball forward, you're getting closer to the end zone. Every quarterback knows that. Every team player knows that. There is an old saying, you know, one step forward, two steps back. Every once in a while that'll happen to you. Just know it's part of life. You know, when you build software and you're an architect like I am, you want to build machines that do things for you in software so that you don't have to cut and paste that, you know, that piece of code over and over and over again. So you create these factory classes that do things for you. Well, more often than not, you won't completely have thought out your software in terms of all the little factory libraries that you're supposed to write. And so you'll be halfway down, just you can just taste, you know, that final moment where you get to run your code and see if it works, and you realize, oh gosh, you know, I just found out that I'm cutting and pasting this one piece of code over and over and over, so I'm going to go ahead and take it, put it into a generic library, and make it a wheel that can be used over and over again. But here's the good news. So I'm going to close this off with. The more that you can accomplish little tiny tasks as a result of focusing in the now, you will build up muscle memory and constitutional abilities, meaning you have the wherewithal to do it over and over again, and it just gets easier and easier and easier. And what's really beautiful about it is if you have project A and project B that have nothing to do with each other, you're mowing your lawn, but you got to write a book. Just taking a break every once in a while from the book when you're finding yourself incapable of pushing through some of the procrastination or whatever, you don't have your mind focused properly, and you go out and mow that lawn. The beautiful thing is mowing the lawn will help you write your book sometimes. Cleaning your house will help you do your accounting better. It's because you're dialing into the frequency of accomplishing things, of focusing on the now. And you can think about other things when you're doing, you know, sort of trivial things, right? So you'll just think about it and go, oh, yeah, you know, you'll just be mowing the lawn and be like, oh, that's the plot twist. Holy shit. There it is. Boom. So use that mechanism as well. I'm not going to make this episode long. I've been making episodes that are really long. I'm not going to release this one for a while. I do try to pace the content type. This self-help stuff, if I did it like five self-helps in a row, and let's say they're all amazing, I would lose subscribers, lose your attention, and it's not like I'm living for my subscribers or anything like that, but I do respect the community at large because I like your comments, I like your mind trust, and I think we need to keep it mixed up a little bit. So I am working on some other topics that are more interesting and more scientific or fun. So keep that in mind when you watch these. If you made it this far, thanks for listening. If you haven't already, go to deepthoughtsradio.com. On the front, it's the link to YouTube, the podcast feed, and the Facebook page. So love to hear your comments. Keep them coming. You guys are all phenomenal. I'm very privileged to be at the receiving end of all that. Take care of yourself and someone else, and I will see you in the next Deep Thoughts. Over now.